Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live at 101.3 KPCG, and we're online too, kpcg.fm, live link to thetrumpet.com, coming up on this Wednesday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Unprecedented warmth continues across the United States. Records are just breaking, and throughout this week especially. We'll take a look at that. Also, the media slips up and accidentally tells the truth. You'd be surprised by what they say. Maybe you won't be surprised. And relating to that, four recent examples of why no one trusts the media anymore. That and more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're at 101.3 KPCG online. We're at kpcg.fm, and we have a live link at thetrumpet.com. This is the Wednesday edition. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. Grant, I been battling last week, especially towards the end of the week, a little bit of the cold-flu combo that was going around, and I feel pretty good. I feel like I'm over it, but there's the residual, like, stuffed ear head thing, and so I sound to myself like I'm inside of a cave. I don't know if that's making its way out to the world, but I'm definitely in my own head, as they say.
So you can barely hear yourself talk right now.
I can hear it, but it just sounds weird.
Yeah, I understand. Well, some of our listeners will probably think you sound congested. Like I got an email recently saying I sounded like I was congested when I actually felt great, so I don't know why.
Yeah, it's this particular go around, it seems like with the cold flu combo, it seems like most people get over it and feel pretty good, but there's that residual whatever it is congestion that's there in the head.
Just clogs your head and it makes it hard to think, really. Like, you don't want to use your brain too much.
That's me every day. I've been having a flu my entire life. And we've mentioned this before, but I don't know if the flu is... I think it is worse this year, especially in Oklahoma, but I don't know if it's because of the temperature swings, but we've got like these 30-degree swings every week from high temperatures. I mean, we're going to be 78 today, I think mid-80s tomorrow, high of like 50-something on Friday. And so with it bouncing up and down like that, it seems like maybe that's one of the reasons the flu is worse.
That's probably true, because it seems like sickness tends to rise a lot when the temperature swings dramatically between the seasons. And this winter, it's been like we've had 7 or 8 or 9 seasons where we've just been riding the roller coaster. So maybe every single time we ride the roller coaster, we go higher, we go low. Basically, people are getting sick more and more.
You know, they have those movies where there's some sort of illness that's killing everybody. Those come out every couple of years. And I felt like I was in one of those movies over the weekend, because I wasn't feeling well, so I was having just kind of a down day and not doing anything. And that evening, I decided to get a movie so we could just lay back and do nothing and watch a movie. We watched Sully, by the way, which is Miracle on the Hudson. It's pretty good. In any event, I went to Redbox. So some people probably laugh at that because they're like, we have Netflix. Well, I don't. Okay, so I went to Redbox.
Oh, I went to Redbox a few weeks ago. No shame.
But so anyway, I'm at Redbox, and I'm checking out to see what the movies are. And there's a guy next to me at the next Redbox, and he's just sounds like he's dying. And they're just like, coughing and coughing and coughing. Somebody drives behind us. They're hacking, and then somebody else is coughing. It was so surreal. I was like, the epidemic is sweeping the nation. And so I don't know if they all had the flu, but it's what it sounded like.
Well, those people are the cause of why everyone else is getting sick. They're out in public with that deathly disease.
There's that commercial where I think they say, like, if you could see your cough, And the lady coughs, and then you see like the smoke of it. They're like, you would know, you know, what you're doing, or you know how you're spreading it and things like that. And I thought, oh, that would be effective. Actually,
sounds like smoker's lung.
Yeah,
the smoke coming back up,
coming back out of there. Anyway, the flu has been going around, and the weather is just so bizarre this year. This is a write up from Washington Post. Middle America is basking in unprecedented February warmth. There's a stunning 2,805 record-high temperatures that have occurred across the nation just this month, and there's only 27 record lows, so we're definitely in a warm swing. The warmest air with respect to normal has focused on the Midwest, and in some areas it's unlike anything they've ever witnessed. Flower stems are sprouting in Chicago, and the Great Lakes are practically ice-free. In an area normally thick with ice, a boat was seen skimming over the calm waters of Lake Michigan on Monday afternoon. Chicago set record highs on four straight days between Friday and Monday, completing a dizzying number of other warm weather milestones, Before Sunday, when it was 70, it had reached 70 only three other times in record, dating back to 1871. Then it hit 70 again Monday, and it could hit 70 once more Wednesday. So when we get warm down here, it's not super unusual. We kind of have our ups and downs. But up north, like in Chicago, Wisconsin, very unusual for February.
Well, those places are normally frozen for 8 months out of the year just because of the fact that they're right on the lake.
Yeah.
So for them to be having warm weather, that just really stands out.
I can just imagine the excitement, because there's a real excitement when it warms up again, when you're up north and it's been cold for a few months and you hear the birds and you hear different things. Really exciting. So I can imagine they're pretty happy. And I did see this morning on the weather that they might have another storm coming, though, with snow and so forth. So that's the way it goes. Get your hopes up, and then it crushes them under the icy hand of winter. So we'll see what happens. It's been an unusual year, to say the least. And but it does always make me a little nervous about the summer. What is that going to be?
That's true.
If it's hot now, if the trend continues, it's global warming.
Make it 130 then. Let's go.
Oof.
Let's get the extremes.
What's the hottest you've ever been in?
Probably like 120, something yeah. like that.
Was that here?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, or close to that, like 115,
yeah.
something like that.
Yep. I can remember definitely 110-ish, and then there's always a heat index, like it feels hotter. And, I can remember a few days like that and not feeling well. It gets that hot. I mean, it's pretty rough. And I remember also seeing an older person on that day and thinking, I don't think they're going to make it. It's just too hot. I mean, for anybody, but especially if you're, you know, older or younger. That's always, if you're the very young or the very old, the extremes there always are more dangerous.
Right, yeah. Whenever I was a teenager, I used to weed eat all day in the sweltering heat. So I've actually kind of built an immunity to it. And I actually like it now just because of my association with the good old days when I used to work really hard with my hands, you know.
Back in the day.
Now I sit at a desk and I feel like I'm dying.
Well, there's some truth to that in regard to if you're in the air conditioning all the time, which a lot of us are, and then you're going outside in the heat and you're going back and forth. That really kind of messes with
right.
you. And whereas if you were just outside or you acclimated to it, I tell you, when it gets really hot in the summer, when I feel the best with the heat is if I go to the pool, which I don't do very often, but occasionally the kids convince me, come on, Dad. I'm like, oh, okay.
Fine.
But then I feel fine after I get out. You know, even if it's warm, I feel very comfortable. So I think being in such a climate-controlled environment, it's 70 degrees or whatever it is, and then going out to 100, 105, right. The body's kind of in a state of confusion and shock.
Right. Yeah, it's like during Philadelphia Youth Camp when it gets really hot, at least that way you feel like you've really been doing a lot. Even if, you know, you might be on the verge of passing out, at least you know that you really were accomplishing something because you sweated through everything you're wearing.
The body does acclimate, so you just the extremes, and I think that's what's kind of maybe could be causing some of the flu stuff this year, but that's probably a lot of causes. Here's a report from ABC. Russia is on the move. Planes, tanks, and ships. Russian military gets massive upgrade. The Russian military received a sweeping array of new weapons last year, including 41 intercontinental ballistic missiles and the wide-ranging military modernization will continue this year, they say, the defense minister said on Wednesday. He told lawmakers, that's Minister Sergei Shoigu, that the Air Force will receive 170 new aircraft. The Army will receive 905 tanks and other armored vehicles, while the Navy will receive 17 new ships this year. They say amid tensions with the West, the Kremlin has continued to spend big on new weapons despite Russia's economic downturn. So the U.S. still outspends everybody by a lot. But, you know, Russia definitely is aggressive. They and like they show here, they're getting more military. They're trying to upgrade their military technologically as well. And then China now, they in the South China Sea, they're building installations where they can house missiles. So they're definitely on the move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely seems like they're building their military. And until recently, we have had a focus on decreasing our military power. It seems like Mr. Trump wants to reverse that. But I've also heard on the Trumpet Hour before coming over here that Germany was really going up to the border with Russia and trying to bolster that area just so that they're on guard against Russia and they can stop any advancements there in Eastern Europe. And I just thought that was incredibly hypocritical when they just kind of let dangerous refugees come in en masse. And yet at the same time, they're very focused about stopping Russia.
Yeah, it is a very aggressive policy that's happening over there. I'm drinking this this concoction that my wife gives me. It's really good.
Apple cider vinegar?
Apple cider vinegar.
Oh.
And it's got like some cayenne in it. And I was taking a drink while you were talking and listening to you, by the way. And the cayenne hit my throat, and I'm over here going like, ah. I just thought I'd share that with the audience.
I had a bad experience with apple cider vinegar. My wife, before we were married, actually made me a drink with that in there. And after a while, she was increasing the dosages every time until it was so strong it came out of my nose.
Oh, no.
And she laughed at me while I was dying, and my nose felt like it was disintegrating for the next hour.
Wow.
And I haven't drank it since. It's been a year, and I haven't had it at all since.
Oh, well, this concoction, it's got some honey in it to take the bite out, and so I actually like it. I actually find it to be refreshing. But
I'll have to get back to it. I apparently, it's healthy. I just have been scarred for a while because of that bad experience.
Because of it almost burning your nose off.
Really, for an hour, my nose was pouring. Like, it just wouldn't stop running for an hour. It was horrible.
Maybe that's like a great treatment for sinuses or something.
Yeah, it would. It'd just blow it out.
Wow. Interesting. So sorry about that, listeners. I totally took us off the track of what we were talking about.
We don't have that noise canceling button here. We can't just hack without anyone noticing.
Yeah, so I felt like I had to, and then I came back and I didn't have my normal voice there. I felt like I had to explain what was happening behind the scenes. That's why we need a video camera here to live stream it so people can see the
exactly. We wouldn't have to explain anything. They don't know
the comical things that are happening. Of course, I'd need to get a cowboy hat. I don't know why.
I'd get a sombrero.
I used to occasionally watch Imus before he got fired for whatever his comments were. And he always wore a cowboy hat. And his headphones looked like a stethoscope. I was
really
thought it was unique.
That's funny.
Anyway, so that's all way off the track. What we were saying is planes, tanks, and ships. Russian military gets massive upgrade. So they're on the move and doing some things. Even if they don't have the total capability right now that maybe, say, the U.S. would have, they definitely have the will to do something, as we've seen. And and they do have military personnel and people willing to go. Well, even if they're not willing, they're going to have to go. And Russia and China, of course, have a huge population center. Mm-hmm. And so if you know much about Bible prophecy there, you do know they're going to be quite involved in things, and they already are. So interesting to see the moves that they're doing. Iran came out, too, and said that they're going to slap the U.S. in the face if the U.S. tries anything.
Okay,
so that was
then.
They had their military parade yesterday, I think it was, or the other day, and so they always have their tough talk, and you know, they said if the enemy, which would be us apparently, if the enemy tries anything, we'll give them a stern slap to the face or something. Which, I mean, again, you do have, they are the state sponsor of terrorism. They do cause a lot of problems. I don't mean to minimize that, but when they make a comment like their English just doesn't seem very good. And so they say, we'll give you a slap in the face. That's not like a death blow. It's just kind of like an inconvenience.
Right.
Like, we'll slap. You know, I was thinking of a movie where, you know, like an old movie where a lady would slap a guy in the face or something. and it doesn't faze him. He just looks at her like, yeah, and, right. You know, so I don't think, I think they meant it more strongly than it came across, but.
It's probably accurate, though, because anything they would do to us would be like a slap in the face. They can't really do much more than that. It doesn't seem like they're capable of much more than that, although they would love to be pretty soon.
Sure. I mean, they'll do whatever they could, and if they could have nuclear weapons to deploy and get them here, and they may already, I mean, it's hard to say, they would certainly do that when the time was right. So, you know, I don't mean to minimize their what they're saying, but at the same time, it's sometimes a little bit interesting. It reminds me of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. When they were, they knew the U.S. was coming and there was going to be a battle there. And so they tried to put out the propaganda films showing their military. And it was discombobulated. Like they weren't marching to the same rhythm. And it was like, and they'd have their guns on the wrong shoulders and they were old weapons from the 80s and, you know, fear the might of the Iraqi military. Now, Iran's a different animal for sure. They're much more, deadly serious about some things, but sometimes smaller nations do try to flex their muscles, and it's not a great idea.
Yeah, they're a bit of a ragtag bunch sometimes. Yeah. But yeah, like when we were in Somalia, that didn't go so well for us. They just had a bunch of weapons they got from the Russians or something like that, and then they had this drug that they were able to chew, which made them basically fearless, and then they just kind of hit out all over the city and attacked and ambushed everywhere. So sometimes the ragtag groups, if you're fighting in their territory, it can be a pretty big problem.
For sure. Yeah, if they have the will to fight, that's
makes all the difference.
Most of the battle there. Yeah. Well, here's an interesting one from Grabian News. Mika Brzezinski, I think people are familiar with her probably. She's done a lot in the media over the years. I think she's on MSNBC's Morning Joe these days. And so they were talking about President Trump, and she said that this. She said, our job is to control exactly what people think, being the media. And so it was kind of interesting that she would say that. Obviously, some outlets picked up on it. Her co-host didn't seem to bat an eye at it. I don't think most people would agree with that, that that's the media's job, to control exactly what people think. I would think that their job would be to report information and let people decide, right? Isn't that even the tagline of like Fox or somebody? Mm-hmm. We report, you decide, or something like that. And so this is an interesting thing to say, and it probably does reveal what the media does think, that a lot of them, that, well, it's our job to control information, tell you what we think is important and highlight what we think is relevant and kind of shape the way you think about things.
Yeah, it just depends on the way they report. I think even if they were being balanced, that would kind of shape how people think, just because at least they wouldn't be pushing you in either direction, which would give you more of a choice of how you view different issues. That's not what we're seeing, though. We're seeing different news outlets purposely ignoring some stories, purposely giving 10 times more coverage than they should of other stories. So they really are actively trying to control what you think, and not just by reporting honestly and letting you choose.
They were discussing, her and her co-host, President Trump's entreaties to the American people to remain skeptical of the press. Brzezinski worried that if the economy turns south, Americans may end up trusting him, President Trump, over the media. She says this, and it could be that while unemployment and the economy worsens, he could have undermined the messaging so much that he can actually control exactly what people think. And that is our job. So it's been very interesting to watch, certainly the campaign, and then since President Trump has won the election. He's kind of outwitted the media at every turn. And it kind of feels like that's happened here again, to where he's push back at them and gets them to kind of reveal what they actually think, which is, well, wait a second, we control what people think, not you. And so it seems to me like he's kind of outed them or right. caused them to out themselves a little bit.
Yeah, that's a bit embarrassing of her to say that. She is the Democrat out of the pairing there. Joe Scarborough is the Republican on that show. But she didn't seem like much of a radical leftist at all. She was pretty honest about how a lot of the media was attacking Mr. Trump for no reason. But maybe maybe she's kind of revealed her true way of thinking with that comment there.
Yeah, she did have, I was trying to think, I think she did have a moment during the campaign where she came out and said that she was against President, or, you know, a candidate Trump, and it was going to, like, work to not, I forget what she said, but she came out and said something pretty strong there, too. So she's kind of made some headlines that way, and, well, if nothing else, it gets their show in the headlines, I guess. It gets their name out there. But really an interesting comment that she makes. And but also just it, within that comment, she says, and again, they're speculating on things, but she says, you know, unemployment and the economy worsens and so forth. What if it doesn't, though? I mean, why does she think it will? Like, she's kind of putting it out there like, well, you know, when it happens. And I think obviously I think long term it will happen, but short term it may not. There might be some boosts. I mean, President Trump, no matter what people would think of him, I mean, he does have some business knowledge. I'm not saying he's perfect with it, but. But he's been in the field. I mean, he's played the game for a long time. So,
right. Well, the thing is with the media, they're so convinced that they're right that they probably believe that it is their actual job to control what people think. They're saying, well, we're not biased. We're just right. And then we need to prove this to everybody else. That's why you can't name a single conservative presence on CNN, for example. Like, because CNN's angle is that, well, liberalism is the correct way to view things. We have to report it this way or else we're deceiving the American people. So they have like this twisted sense of duty, and that's why they are reporting the way they are.
Right. It's sort of like this gap in thinking between, well, I'm sincere and I believe this versus, but this is true. Just because a person is sincere and they believe what they're saying doesn't make it true. They can believe they're right, but it doesn't make it right. And that, I think we see that in a lot of the media, like you say.
They should realize the amount of deception they have gone to where they do strategically remove certain facts from their stories or they ignore certain angles. Just because you're convinced that your angle is right, why would you be so afraid to present the entire story? That just kind of shows that they are in some deep form of denial there.
Yeah, so interesting comments. And we've got a story later that you're going to talk more about where there's some specific examples of why people don't trust the press.
Right.
So we'll talk about that later. Here's a strange story, kind of a disappointing one, I guess. There's obviously been tension between the police and certain people in the communities, different communities. So the police have done some things to try to better their relationship with the communities they serve. And some people aren't comfortable with that. This is from ABC. Police end High Five Fridays at Massachusetts school amid complaints. So the police were trying to, they would go to the school on the Fridays and just be there and be friendly with the kids to give them a good impression of the police and try to take the fear out of the police, I guess. A Massachusetts police department said it ended a program that aimed to positively engage with elementary school students after residents raised concerns that it may scare children who've had negative experiences with police. And I don't see how that would be the case at all. I mean, if the officer came in and arrested you, that would be scary. But if they're just there to say hi, I think that would do the opposite. I think you'd become more positively engaged with them. The Northampton Police Department said it decided to scrap its High Five Friday program, which kicked off in December after residents said that some children, particularly minorities and undocumented immigrants, may be uncomfortable with uniformed police officers greeting them at school in the morning. 90% of Northampton's approximately 30,000 residents, though, are white, according to the most recent U.S. Census data. So there's a small group that feel that this is scaring the kids. It says concerns were shared that some kids might respond negatively to a group of uniformed officers at their school, the police department said in a post on its Facebook page last week. People were specifically concerned about kids of color, undocumented children, or any children who may have had negative experiences with the police. As of Wednesday morning, the post announcing the halt had racked up more than 400 Facebook reactions, more than 300 comments. So even if some kids did have a negative view of the police, wouldn't this help them? Like, isn't that the point?
Well, and why would they have a negative view of the police in the first place? I don't think they are on the patrol to take down young kids. It doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense. Usually, if you have a negative experience with the police, it's because you did something wrong. Or if you're afraid of the police every time you see them, you probably are hiding something. A few days ago, I went to the library, and there's a police desk there, I guess, just to make sure that people don't do something crazy. But it didn't scare me in the slightest. I felt safer, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would think that if there are some kids that have had some negative or do have negative thoughts about the police, it's obviously because of either what's happened in their home or what is said in their home.
Yeah.
And it seems like those kids are the ones that would benefit the most from a program like this.
Mm-hmm.
We have gone just randomly, you know, to a store or something, and they might have police there, or they might have the fire department there. It's a community engagement activity of some kind. And my kids love it. They come home, they got a sticker, and they got to see the police officer and or the firefighter. And it's been a huge highlight for them. They've always loved it, and it's been exciting. And now, if we were stealing at the store, then, yeah, we'd be more concerned. But if you're following the laws, I don't think, like you said, there's any reason to be worried. And in most cases, the police, any public servant, is doing a really good job for the community. Yeah, you're going to have a bad apple in there once in a while. Pretty rare, though. And even in the situations where there's been some bad ones and that have made the news, they typically have taken advantage of criminals. So even there, even in that situation, the reason the officer or whoever was allowed to do something they shouldn't was because there was criminal activity.
Right.
If you're just a law-abiding citizen, very rarely are you going to have a problem. It could happen, but again, so rare, so extreme. Most everybody's really trying to help out, and this seems like a program designed to try to combat the negative feelings that the media has been pushing out there. And they have to end it because his kids are scared. And so ending it, though, wouldn't that just make the kids continue to be scared and more fearful? Because if you reverse this situation, let's say it's a school that's, you know, 95% one race. Who cares what race it is, but they're one race. And they're not comfortable with a different race because they just don't have a lot of experience with them. And so they say, well, we're going to bring in a few from this other race. They're going to teach you about their culture, you know, and you get to know them. And they said, well, it's scaring the kids. We're going to stop the program. I mean, people would be outraged, right?
Right.
They'd say, how dare you? You know, but it's no different.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good program. I wish they'd keep doing it.
That does seem like a really good program. And like your kids viewed the police and the firefighters, they are heroes. They are serving in a way that really does put them in the line of danger to help the rest of us quite often, actually, way more often than there are bad instances of what they've done. So naturally, it would seem like any kid would think that those are good people to look up to, especially if you think of like all of the activities when you're a young child in school and they say, well, what career would you want to have when you get older? Half of them are saying police and firefighter. Why would they not say that? Well, the parents probably are saying things at home, like you mentioned. Those attitudes have to start at home because they certainly aren't starting at school when these kids are saying they want to be a police officer when they grow up.
Yeah, we had a few field trips when I was a kid. I don't know if we did a whole lot with the police, but certainly with the fire department, those are like the best days. Mm-hmm. They'd bring the truck around. You get to get on the truck and look around. I mean, it was an epic day. So.
Yeah, it does seem like it's a matter of not taking responsibility. Like if you had one bad experience with a police officer and then said, well, they're all out to get me because one guy pulled me over, and you don't consider why he might have pulled you over, that you had like a taillight out, that's not a racial issue, that's not discrimination. Anyone who has a taillight out is supposed to get pulled over. And yet if you harbor a bad attitude toward the police for decades, you're just going to pass that on to your kids, and they're going to grow up the same way, not knowing any better.
There's the really tragic story. I think it was just over the weekend or the other day where I think it was Los Angeles, an officer got killed and then another one wounded. And they just thought they were going to a traffic incident because there was an accident. But the guy that he was driving a stolen car, and I think he'd just gotten out on parole. And they just showed up to, okay, what happened, fender bender, and they killed the cops, the one, and then injured the other. So, you know, you have to put yourself in their shoes. You don't know what you're going to. And so are they going to be a little cautious? Sometimes a little, like, maybe over the top, antsy, maybe. But you can understand why, because they don't know you until they check out your record and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they go to those situations all the time. And so I think if putting yourself in their shoes really helps to appreciate maybe why they might be a little standoffish sometimes.
Well, that's the thing. It seems like everyone who is in the street writing about police brutality, they call it, they would make the same decision if they were in the same situation. If you have a man reaching into his pocket to pull out a gun and point it at you, you're going to shoot him right away. That's just self-preservation. That's the natural instinct that kicks in. People should realize that. That's just pretty common sense stuff.
Tough job. So anyway, they got rid of that program there in Massachusetts. Scared the kids. Please. Here's this is from the Examiner. It's just amazing what kind of a country we're turning into, but hundreds of campuses encourage students to turn in fellow students for offensive speech. So if one student finds somebody else's speech offensive, they're supposed to turn them in. Does that remind you of, say, communist Russia or Nazi Germany?
Yeah.
You know, you're speaking out against the state, turn them in. It says hundreds of campuses across the country, administrators are encouraging students to report one another or their professors for speech protected by the First Amendment, or even mere political disagreements. The so-called bias response teams. That's the new group. I wonder if they do High Five Fridays. Bias response teams reviewing these often anonymous reports. That's convenient. You know, who said it? Well, we can't tell you. Well, how am I going to even know, you know? Typically include police officers, student conduct administrators, and public relations staff who scrutinize the speech of activists and academics. So, I mean, I don't know if they get paid specially to do this, but it's a whole other layer of responsibility that doesn't seem to need to be there. And so there's very specific examples of this, a lot of them actually. Here's a few of them. At Appalachian State University, students reported on one another for chalked messages that were pro-Trump, as well as chalked messages calling Trump a racist. So it's on both sides, and now they're reporting each other. Conservatives are reporting the liberals. Liberals are reporting the conservatives.
Wow.
And then they're sitting there and reviewing it and determining what to do.
That's pretty obvious, though, what kind of speech is allowed, and that's all speech except for speech that directly tells people to commit violence against others. Every other speech is fine. Personally, I would like it if there were some sort of bias response team when it came to, like, using profanity in public.
Yeah.
You can't take a little kid anywhere without some moron just cursing right next to him and not even caring that there's a 5-year-old, you know?
That's true. Yeah. Instead of, like, policing other people, you know, people used to police themselves a little bit.
Right.
You know, maybe I won't say that, or maybe this wouldn't be the time for that. But the universities are really going after each other. But both sides are doing it. And I suppose, you know, you'd think, well, hey, if they're going to report me, I'm going to report them. You know, so you could see it getting, you know, escalating. I could see that happening where somebody gets called in and they say, you know, somebody reported you. And you're like, oh, yeah, well, I'm reporting so-and-so. And you, you know, go back and forth with it. Students at Ohio State University reported each other for comparing Hillary Clinton to Hitler. Students at Texas Tech were whispering to administrators that the Black Student Union's tweets in support of the Black Lives Matter movement offended them. Meanwhile, the University of Oregon saw fit to dictate community expectations to students who had the audacity to complain about oppression. So it's going back and forth. They say complaining about oppression may bring the bias response team to your dorm room to explain why your views were insufficiently polite, decent, and non-controversial. So you can imagine the intense scrutiny of the the bias response team. It's got about as much authority as the mall cop. So mall cop has more, actually. But
oh yeah, definitely.
So anyway, okay, what happens? Well, sort of nothing. I mean, they know that they can't really do anything about it. Some people have tried to get lawyers and figure out a creative way to sue somebody into not talking, but that's not really legal. So at the end of the day, this is kind of a toothless exercise. There's no bite to it, other than it's just a hassle and it's just more bickering and arguing, and it's just getting people just more and more divided.
The big lesson we can take from this is don't attend a big mainstream university. They're treating their students like kindergartners, giving them safe spaces, pillows, coloring books, cookies, therapy dogs. Now they're having bias response teams patrol people's speech and show up at your room if you said something that could have maybe sparked a disagreement with anybody else around you. This is just like some sort of bubble that they're living in that I guess normal people should not want to be involved in that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just a really odd thing. And I, you know, I don't want to give the listener the impression that like we're really digging around looking for these stories. I mean, they're all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, any main, you know, news site you go to, there's probably another three or four today. And a lot of times we ignore most of them, but sometimes they're just like,
it's like the front page of every website.
So this is just, it's out there and it's happening. And it's a lot of times we don't even get into them because they're just not worth getting into. But occasionally, I mean, it's just, it's the state of the country as far as universities go. And so that's, I guess it's worth highlighting at times. So it's just, and again, it's both sides of the, whatever the political equation or any type of equation is, there it is, you know, highlighting the division and the difficulties. And at the end of the day, what are you going to do about it? they can't currently make anybody stop saying something. I saw another one where a college had to get rid of all of its whiteboards. Because people were writing offensive messages on the whiteboards. So the goal, if you just don't teach people to read and write, then no one can be offended by them, right. At least by words, because we don't know them anymore.
Then they'll just be offended by grunts.
Yeah.
The tone of the grunt.
No more grunting. It seems like we're going backwards as a society.
It does. I mean, the universities used to be at least a hotbed for free speech, even though there were a multitude of problems with them always. But at least you could have discourse on campus. Now it's like, well, we're going to riot. We're going to destroy our own property if you bring certain speakers to campus. If you say anything we disagree with, we're going to scream and pour ketchup packets on ourselves to make a scene and blow an air horn so that no one can hear what you're saying.
There was a New York Times reporter that admitted that he jumped into the anti-Trump rallies. He was part of them. And then, well, what kind of I don't know if it was a guy or a girl that was the reporter, but what are they going to do then? What kind of a story are they going to write? You know?
He's just an activist.
Yeah.
He's completely compromised now.
Yep, absolutely. So you're not going to get a very fair a reading of things from people like that. So, of course, this one happened. It's kind of funny, I guess. Iceland's president said he'd ban putting pineapple on pizza. And Twitter responds. So this is a hard story because Iceland, the names are so different and long, and there's weird markings.
Definitely
so
are.
I'm going to give it a shot. The president of Iceland probably isn't very popular in Hawaii right now, they say. That's where pineapple comes from.
Hawaiian pizza?
But do you like pineapple on your pizza, by the way?
It's not my favorite topping, but I like every single topping.
Yeah.
So I do like it, I guess.
As a kid, I was not aware that it existed until some point where somebody ordered it.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of it horrified me because fruit is a separate thing from cheese.
Yeah, it's a weird idea, when you're younger.
In my mind.
Yeah.
But then as I got older, I was like, oh, okay, that actually it kind of works. Like you can put fruit with cheese at times and it works. I'm like you. I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way to get it. But I probably wouldn't avoid it either.
Yeah, my wife's favorite is actually chicken and pineapple, so I've learned to adjust.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite, but I have it probably more than most now because that's the one she wants.
I'm the tomato basil pizza guy.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites. But anyway, so the president of Iceland said that if he had the power, Now we're getting down to some good topics here, some real hard, you know, hard policy. Last week during a visit to one of the high schools in northern Iceland, President, I apologize, sir, Guðni period, that's his middle sound, Johannes Anuring, give or take. It probably sounds nothing like that either. That's the thing that's so infuriating is that you look at the name and then it probably is nothing. It sounds nothing like that. Joked that he'd ban putting pineapple on pizza if only he had the power to make laws. And so I think everyone took it as the joke that it was, but it's kind of funny. His remarks came during a question and answer session with the school's history class. Getting down to some deep, deep things here. According to the New York Post, the students also asked him about his favorite soccer team, which is Manchester United.
I was going to say that before he even did.
Yeah.
That's too common.
That's the one everybody knows.
Come on, people.
Right, yeah. It's like, what's your favorite NBA team? Lakers.
Yeah.
Even if they don't. And the stone where he buy the store, rather, where he buys his socks, which they didn't give an answer for that. Which that one I'm actually like, yeah, where do you buy socks in Iceland?
Why didn't they tell us? You can't just leave us hanging
yeah.
there.
The Iceland sock shop?
With all like the different symbols yeah. around it, 30 letters.
They'd be very warm, I would think. It'd be cold over there. But his stance on pizza was the one that made the headlines and set off a heated debate on Twitter. Some people were very much behind his policies. Others were not. And he then had to come out and say, I do not have the power to make laws which forbid people to put pineapples on their pizza. I am glad that I do not hold such power. So he had to clarify for those that were getting a little bit worried. I wonder if there was a rush on a pineapple pizza in Iceland, black market, you know?
I just can imagine people like hiding their pizza as they put a couple pineapples yeah. on there, putting all the blinds down on their house so that no one can look in.
And then at their university, they'll have the pineapple bias response team show up. Somebody said you were eating pineapple on your pizza? Oh, no. What you're talking about?
Please, no.
So that was kind of a funny story, and I get, you know, that's, I suppose, the moments that you dream of as a politician, kind of the lighthearted ones that don't totally offend anybody. And that's hard to do. And I think he still probably offended a few, so that's kind of interesting. You're listening to Trumper Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. We'd like your comments if you'd like to send those in. Comments at kpcg.fm, and story ideas, anything you have for us. Puzzles, word searches, recipes, anything.
Oh, man. People literally send us those things, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to, the one I did that I thought was funny was the pictograph, and then somebody sent one. So
I can't. It's framed right over
yeah,
there.
Yeah. I can't use it anymore because I've said that. So I have to think of scrolls, parchment, relics from a lost bygone era.
Autographed memorabilia.
Autographed
That's what
memorabilia.
We should get.
Yeah. Yeah. Theories on the NBA draft, anything you'd like to send those, or the trade deadline, rather, sorry, and the draft. I'll take either one.
Tomorrow. The trade deadline's tomorrow.
Yes.
It's exciting.
It's always exciting to see what happens there. So you can send those to comments at kpcg.fm. Also, on Twitter, you can follow us at kpcgfm. The Trumper Daily Radio Show is coming up, also the Key of David program in a little bit here. Trumper Daily Radio Show with Stephen Fleury back today there at Edstone, England, talking a lot about the last hour time period. If you're not familiar with that, listen to the show. It'll give you a lot of great info on it. And even if you are, it's very good to be reminded of that on the Trumper Daily Radio Show. Of course, the archives are online, too, at kpcg.fm. Also, stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. A few headlines. Germany on par with America. China eyes Latin America in ashes of Monroe Doctrine. American withdrawal presents opportunity for Europe. And an analysis piece by Jeremiah Jacques. Russia's deadly plot to keep Montenegro from joining NATO. That's a really good analysis piece that's there, too, at thetrumpet.com. So you can go and check all that stuff out. It's free. There's no charge for that. Go check it out.
No advertisements either.
No advertisements. Advertisements drive me crazy.
I
on
do.
The internet, when things are popping up, and especially when you go to click on the headline of a story and then like an advertisement jumps in right in front and takes you away to another site. And like,
that's
no!
So annoying. Do they realize that that does not actually win anyone over? Those types of ads that hijack where you're trying to click?
Mm-hmm. Drives me crazy.
Or like the ones where you click on a video and then it says like 1/7, which means you're on the first ad out of 7 that you have to watch in a row before you even get to the video.
Mm-hmm.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
How could anyone wait that long?
Well,
it must really be worth it. It must be some great content.
It's got to be something you really want to get to. Yeah, for sure. Those are frustrating. Also, the Trumpet Hour is coming up here in a bit on KPCG. And one of the topics on the Trumpet Hour today is calorie counting. Is it a good idea? Not a good idea? Does it work to keep weight off, to get weight off? Really interesting there from a nutritionist that frequents the show. And I just saw in relation to that on CNN here, new study suggests strategies for keeping off pounds. And there's a new strategy every day. But they did have one good point. I thought it's probably worth mentioning. They said the people that, in a lot of cases, are successful in losing weight and then keeping the weight where they want it, they have a group that they do it with. I think that's a good point. Some people are very disciplined by themselves and they can do it, but... typically, you know, the old saying, birds of a feather flock together. It's true. I mean, you see people out and about town, and usually a family is all kind of one way or the other.
Right.
And so it is good. I know I don't love doing exercising by myself, but I like playing sports with people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the group thing works for me, helps me a lot.
Yeah, it does really hold you accountable if you have to show up at a place at a certain time. And someone else is going to be like, hey, where were you? I was there waiting for you. It's a lot easier or a lot harder to bail than whenever you're just going there by yourself and it's basically an honor system.
My wife and I were walking around the neighborhood yesterday, and there's two ladies, and they were a little bit older, but they were running. And they ran past us because we were walking. I'm like, all right, you know, fair enough. And then they like passed us again, and then like a third time. And I'm like, what? Who are these people? They were like, I don't know, Olympic athletes or something. I kept like, are they behind us now? You know, are they going to run by us, one carrying the other? We got lapped like three times.
It's incredible. They were probably running sprints when you weren't around.
Ah, well, I had another theory. I told my wife, I said, they're getting a ride from somebody and they're dropping them off just to mess with us. Just out of our eyesight. And then they run by like it's no big deal. So they put us to shame.
I appreciate people who put that kind of effort into the mental warfare.
Yeah.
Just to give someone a triple take.
I was surprised that they kept up the pace. So it was pretty amazing. Here's a write-up that you've got, Grant, for us from the Federalist. Four recent examples show why no one trusts media fact checks. They always come out with a big fact check, and then but apparently people aren't trusting them.
Those are everywhere now. Every big website has some fact check of Mr. Trump's latest press conference, whatever the case may be. So they're all over the place, and yet I have never really had much of a desire to read them because you kind of even know before you read them that there's going to be some bias. Sure enough, this article brings out four examples from basically the last week or so where the facts were either completely distorted or even false. The facts that they are paid to check, apparently.
Yeah, that happened. Well, I don't know about the fact-checking side of it, but yesterday we talked about how they were really going after President Trump's comments about Sweden, and they had a bunch of facts, and oh, nothing's wrong in Sweden, and then that exact same day, there were riots in Sweden. So I don't know if their facts were wrong, but they were using the facts at least to show that there was absolutely no problem on the same day that there was a major problem.
Well, I'll just paraphrase Mark Twain. He said there are lies, worse lies, and statistics that in that order, an ascending level of lies. So the statistics, you can manipulate them any way you want to. Malmo, Sweden, has become what they call the rape capital of Europe. There's a reason they call it that. You can't just use some other stats to say that there's nothing wrong there.
Yeah, what they said about it was that's only because they changed the way they define rape. That was the way they tried to get out of that.
Right.
So what are the four examples?
Well, this article actually starts out with a pretty shallow, humorous one, but it even just shows the extent to which they will try to contradict Mr. Trump, especially. This isn't even the first one. This is just their lead-in. He called Meryl Streep overrated because, obviously, she went up during a recent award show and attacked him.
Right.
And they said, well, fact check, she's not overrated because she's won all these awards. Well, to be overrated in the first place, you have to be highly rated. In other words, you have to win a lot of awards. So it just kind of shows you it takes one step to dismantle all the logic. And you see it in all these four points that they bring out as well. That actually did not disprove anything Mr. Trump said. You have to win awards before you can be called overrated.
Right.
That's pretty obvious. That's by definition, and yet they got that wrong somehow.
Yeah. They that would be, I guess, kind of an opinion thing one way or the other. But
yeah.
Just because they have an opposite opinion, it doesn't make his opinion wrong. it's an opinion. You know, do you like that picture or don't you? Yes, no. I mean, it is what it is. So.
Right. So, like, there was no way to disprove him there. So the first point here after that humorous, somewhat shallow introduction was, it says here, Palestinians are not all the same. That's the first point. It's from a New York Times fact check. Well, they ran it from the Associated Press. And apparently Mr. Trump's ambassador to Israel said something like, the Palestinians failed to end incitement of violence. And terrorism had increased since the Oslo Accord in the 1990s, intended to be a stepping stone toward Palestinian statehood. Now, to rebut this man's claim that Palestinians do tend to be a bit violent, the facts, it says here, not all Palestinians are the same. That's all it says. That is their in-depth fact check there.
Yeah, and that's not... a fact check. That's just a general comment, but it doesn't take away the truth of the other statement.
No.
I mean, you can be fighting the Russian military, and they could come back and say, well, not all Russians are the same. That's true. There'd be some variety there, but they are all in the military, you know, the ones that you're fighting at this time. So
it just sounds exactly like a Democratic talking point, just like when we're trying to keep out radical Islamic terrorists, then they say, well, not all Muslims are the same.
Right.
No one is claiming anything like that. So you're basically building up a false argument that we're saying to try and disprove it.
Yeah. We want to stop illegal immigration, some will say. People say, oh, you're against immigrants.
No.
Right.
Once again, no.
Different, yeah.
Yeah. So that was a pretty pathetic example of fact-checking. The second one, it's about the Ninth Circuit, and this is from PolitiFact. And here's the point where the author of this article starts putting fact in quotation marks and then checked in another set of quotation marks. So PolitiFact, fact checked a Sean Hannity claim that the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit is the most overturned court in the country. They rated that false. So basically the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals does by far have the most amount of overturns. They also just happen to submit more rulings to higher courts, but still in terms of numbers, they are the highest overturned court of all. That is the court that overturned Mr. Trump's immigration ruling. But what they tried to do was say, well, percentage wise, the Ninth Circuit Court is not the most. Yeah, but it has more than twice as many overturns as any other court, even though it's not percentage wise the highest.
Right.
It just shows you how deceptive they are about that.
Sure. Because they handle a lot of cases, so it gets kind of diluted, the percentage. But yeah, it doesn't do away with the fact that they have much more than anybody else.
Yeah, the Ninth Court was overturned 77 times between 2010 and 2015. The next closest is 28. So 77 to 28, and yet they're trying to dispute Sean Hannity's claim there.
Right.
There's no way to say that's false, and yet they still try to get around it using percentages.
Yeah, amazing.
This just shows you the level of deception that they will use to push across basically what they believe. The third one here, it's titled An Abortion of a Fact Check. It was a fact check about abortion. This one's a little bit more complicated, but basically they referred to a case to back up their point, and yet what had happened in that abortion case was completely different than what they claimed in the fact check. So they didn't even look into the case that they tried to use as their supporting argument. It did take a few times of me reading this one to try and understand it, so I don't really know if it's worth going into right now.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one is, it says, actually, regulations create jobs. And this is from the Washington Post. Basically, what they're trying to say here is that Mr. Trump didn't save 78,000 jobs because all of those jobs could have gone to the regulation sector. Those coal miners could have all somehow become regulators, as if that is the same type of work that they would naturally flow into if they lost their coal job.
Right. I was always hoping to, you know, change course here after 30 years in the mines and, you know, go work for the government. But
And regulators produce nothing. Right. That's the funny part, too. You're trying to take away a huge product, a coal, which really does produce so much energy for this country, and you're going to replace it with 78,000 regulating jobs. That is clearly a democratic ideal as well. You know, focus so much on the environment that you take away all of the good products.
Yeah, there's I saw a headline yesterday when they were talking about the Trump administration, and they said, they're already cooking the books. And I'm like, well, maybe they are, but as if the previous administration did not. Right. They were notorious for cooking the books.
Seems like all these fact checks are also cooking the books.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just using a different set of numbers to try and push what they already believe. I think a fact check is actually supposed to say, well, here's the facts, and this is now the basis of what I believe, not the basis of what I believe determines what facts I use. They're doing it totally backwards.
It would be so fascinating to sit them down in a room and say, okay, explain to me what a fact is. I bet there'd be some interesting answers.
No one knows anymore. They've made it so confusing. Obviously, one guy will say something that's true, and then the other side will say, well, that's completely false in every single way. What a horrible lie. What a scandal this is. Who's right anymore? It just really takes a lot of research.
You can pay your experts. You know, you can find somebody that has a big title, and they'll tell you what you want for a certain money. Yeah, interesting. It's at the Federalist. Four recent examples show why no one trusts media fact checks. And we did fact check that article, by the way. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live today. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Wednesday. Enjoy the warmth if you're in a warm spot. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.